We're going to talk about that ongoing Washington Post series where they really ask the question, are the U.S. intelligence organizations too big to succeed? Not too big to fail, but too big to succeed. So many different parts of them. So we're going to talk to one of the principal reporters on that story coming up in just about an hour. But we're going to kick it off right now talking, getting today's part of the series looks specifically at industry, all the contractors, and really getting sense of numbers. Joining us right now, Stan Soloway. He is president and CEO of the Professional Services Council, and he joins us with his thoughts on the Washington Post series. Mr. Soloway, thank you, as always, for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Chris.
So give us your sense. I mean, this Post series, and long and voluminous, but clearly well-researched, clearly a lot of data and really getting numbers for the first time. Is it your sense, and so many contractors, and they say overlapping, are there overlapping? Is that really the role of the contractor community?
Well, first of all, I think the series itself it does appear to be relatively well researched. It does have a lot of numbers. The problem is the law of big numbers, because the more numbers you throw out there, the more you lose perspective on what some of them actually mean.
Right.
So I think you have to be a little careful with that. And the second thing is, as you said, the series is really seeking to explore a critical issue. Is, you put it, is the intelligence community too big to succeed? Are we safer? Are we optimizing our intelligence capabilities and resources and so forth? And those are all important questions. And clearly there are a lot of challenges out there that have been evident for some time, and I think the Director of National Intelligence and all the other leaders of the intelligence community have acknowledged they continue to have huge turf issues and organizational and management issues, none of which really have any relationship to whether they are using contractors or not. It's really an internal government organizational management challenge. As to the role of contractors, I think that you can be very misled here by the law of big numbers. First of all, and the data I have actually comes from the former Chief Human Capital Officer for the Director of National Intelligence, and some data he shared with us at a conference where he talked about some of these figures and pointed out that, first of all, half the contractors supporting the intelligence community are doing very routine stuff. They're doing grounds maintenance, they're doing building support, they're doing supporting information technology systems and so forth. It's not the sensitive sort of classified actual intelligence gathering and analysis. But that does leave another half of them. But if you take that half of folks who are doing that, it obviously is not as large a community as the organic workforce within the intelligence community, number one. And number two, they are bringing to the table and to the government skills and capabilities that might well otherwise be inaccessible to the government. A lot of them, and Ron Sanders pointed this out, and as I said at our conference, and he's talked about this, a lot of them have the kinds of skills that are in great demand but short supply across the economy. They're very sophisticated technologists, linguists, mathematicians, and so forth. And because they're in such short supply across the economy, across around the world, in fact, we've been talking about the shortage of technical skills in the United States for how long now?
Yeah.
The marketplace has deemed they have a certain value, and so competing for them becomes a really, really daunting challenge for the government. It's a daunting challenge even for government contractors, but it's no surprise that what they command in the marketplace is substantially more than what the government can afford to pay or can pay on a regular basis. So what we've seen in the intelligence community for the last 3 or 4 years, 5 years, has been an effort, and I remember Director Hayden talking about this several years ago, to really focus some of the community's hiring on some of those really critical high-end skills to enable them to actually manage and control their operations, recognizing they're not going to get all of these people and they could never afford to do it, but they need to have some cadre of capability, residual core skills that enables them to effectively manage and oversee what they're doing. And that's why you've seen this very significant growth in the intelligence community's organic workforce, and actually, based on the data we've seen and been told about, a leveling actually in the use of contractors over the last several years. The bottom line is that in the post 9/11 environment and the incredible surge and dramatic change associated with the intelligence community's needs and requirements, it was a good thing. I think a great asset that we had a private sector that was able to agilely and quickly respond and identify and bring in a lot of those capabilities. To the extent there's redundancy, to the extent there's a lack of collaboration or coordination, this is an issue the government needs to tangle with as a management organizational challenge, not totally unlike a lot of the discussion that's taken place for years at the Defense Department over potentially redundant weapon systems and sort of joint approaches, if you will, to requirements.
Well, it's taken place at the Defense Department. It's taken place at the Veterans Affairs Department. It's taken place at Homeland Security. We can run down a list of that discussion goes on at almost every agency.
Absolutely. And jointness, if you will, which is really what we're talking about here. I mean, in terms of collaboration across all the different intelligence agencies and communities, jointness is a real challenge everywhere in the government.
Part of this is, it seems to me, and at one point the article does mention, of course, the inherently governmental. Part of this is that question about what is inherently governmental. And it's always seemed to me that part of that question is the government's and ours as a country, inability and lack of stepping up to what we say we really need. We don't want that many feds, and yet we still want all the work done. Well, something has to make up that gap.
Well, I actually have a slightly different perspective. I think the intelligence community, in many ways, has been ahead of the rest of the government on this issue. If there are contractors doing what would generally be determined to be inherently governmental work, based on the definitions in law and regulation and so forth, clearly that work should be being performed by federal employees. And to the extent the government can hire and get the people in to do it, which one would hope they could, they ought to be doing that. And then, as I said, there's been a focus on that sort of next tier of maybe not inherently governmental, but that some people like to call closely associated or critical positions that really enable you to interpret what you're being given by your contractors or by others who are supporting you, to direct requirements, to oversee missions, and so forth. But I think that what happens in these kinds of things is that we get into very sort of broad sweeping definitions, that intelligence is an inherently governmental function. Well, the answer is it really isn't. Folks are getting data, they're analyzing it, they're providing reports, and there are government folks who are responsible for interpreting, analyzing those reports and determining what to do with them. That's the inherently governmental portions, when you actually take an action, make a commitment, and so forth. And so I think we have to avoid and steer clear of these sort of sweeping generalizations that some people like to do when they say, well, all government intelligence should be inherently governmental. It really isn't.
Yeah.
And it's impractical and fiscally impossible to make it that way, even if one wanted to. So I don't have a problem with the discussion over critical skills. I do get concerned when people kind of make these sweeping assertions.
But we also see in the story highlights some areas which I think even most contractors have to sit there and go, hold on, I'm being asked to do this? This seems pretty inherently governmental.
Look, that may happen. And as I said earlier, to the extent that is happening, that's a trend and a set of actions that need to be reversed. I can't say that that's not happening. My point is a little bit broader than that, in that those are probably the more limited circumstances. The broad, the vast scope of what is being done is not that kind of work. And so there may well be some areas where they need to be doing some fine-tuning and actually looking carefully and making sure they have the right balance. In many ways, what the intelligence community has been doing for the last several years is very consistent with the OMB's proposed guidance on managing a multi-sector workforce and work reserve for federal employees. They've really been, in their own way, even absent that guidance, kind of been heading in that direction. There's one other thing that was in the article this morning that I actually found very disturbing, and I do want to just put this on the table, although I'm an industry spokesperson, I guess, and so may not have a lot of credibility. I found it very disturbing that the Secretary of Defense made a comment that basically said that there is a dramatic difference in my words, not his, the patriotism and the commitment to mission between government employees and those who work, in an environment where the profit is important. I think, first of all, that ignores the fact that the vast majority of people who are supporting the government, whether they're in government or outside of government, share a same sense of commitment, same sense of patriotism. Many in the private sector are ex-military, ex-intelligence professionals from the government side. And I think that kind of sweeping assertion does not help the discussion. The second piece, to be really frank about it, is if you are concerned that the profit motive may sometimes overpower government interest, the contract is your best vehicle. A well-written contract and well-managed contract gives you more control and more ability to direct how behaviors impact the mission than almost anything else you could do. And so I was very disturbed by that quote from the Secretary, because I thought it was really unfair to the tens of thousands of people who were doing this work, and I thought it was entirely inaccurate.
And there are a lot of times where intelligence folks and DOD folks are working alongside contractors. Sometimes people say, they're doing the same job I am. They're as integral to the mission as I am.
And they're as committed to it, and they're as focused on it. I think we need to get away from that kind of labeling and get down to the critical point that thus far the series has identified, which is we do have this massive intelligence enterprise. The question is, do we have it properly managed, structured, and balanced? That is a very legitimate question, and I think I'm down in Florida at the NCMA World Congress, and former Secretary Cohen spoke here on Sunday, and he talked a little bit about this question, and someone asked him, are we safer today? And he said, yes, we're safer, but we don't, and again, my words, not his, we don't necessarily hear about all of the things the intelligence community has done to prevent attacks.
Yeah.
But clearly we're not as safe as we could be because we still have this gap in our management and organizational structure, our willingness and ability to share information and to actually integrate what we do.
And some of that isn't, I mean, that those kinds of questions aren't a contractor responsibility. That's the government's responsibility.
Right. I mean, the growth in contractors, I mean, the growth in contracting and intelligence, like in any other area, is a direct reflection of what the government's decided it needs.
Yeah. All that being said, the
government controls that.
All that being said, there are a lot of reading through the story. I'm almost reminded of the military-industrial complex, the Eisenhowerian kind of theory, where you know there's so much here, and you look at the map on the Washington Post site, where it is looks like it's in every congressional district across the country. This reaches out and has economic impact, and therefore becomes very hard to pull back.
Well, and look, I mean, to the extent whatever is being done is work that needs to be done, which, you know, if it doesn't need to be done, we shouldn't be doing it. I wouldn't ever argue with that. But to the extent that there's work that is being done that needs to be done, it's a good thing for the economy to have this kind of high-quality opportunity to actually build the private sector, which the president has pointed out is the key to our economic recovery. So it's not the excuse. It's not the reason you do something. But where the two interests can coincide, I think it's a good thing.
Stan Soloway, he is the president and CEO of the Professional Services Council. We have more information, a link to the Washington Post series. You can find it all online, federalnewsradio.com/DoraBeckInsider, or just go to DoraBeckInsider.com. How's the weather in Florida?
It is not as hot as Washington, but actually more humid.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, because it feels, you know, I'm almost wringing out my shirt when I walk across the street, for goodness sake. So,
yeah, well, it's, as I said, not quite as hot, but the humidity is pretty intense.
There you go. Stan Soloway, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Chris. Thank you.